Me, though? She snorted. Oh? I elevated an eyebrow. Not passing judgment was rule number one in trying to get information from someone. Is that a common occurrence with Frank? Him causing trouble? Frank's yet to meet any type of trouble he doesn't like. What are you, anyway? You're too well-dressed to be a cop. I'm a lawyer. I took a step forward into the hallway and could now smell the unmistakable stench of weed, mildew, rotted food, and apathy. Would you say he is capable of violence? Sure. She shrugged again, another rumble coming from her belly. He's gotten into plenty of fights before. What about murder? Who did you say you were again? She narrowed her eyes at me, taking a step back. She wasn't going to talk, unprompted. It was time to cut the bullshit. What's your name? I asked. Many people thought lawyers were combative, aggressive people. Some, unprofessional ones, were. But most were even-tempered. I killed people with kindness whenever possible. I didn't have to flaunt my power. I carried it effortlessly. She looked around her as if there was something, someone who could stand in her way of accepting the help I was offering her. Behind me, chained dogs barked in someone's backyard, trying to jump the fence. A baby cried in the distance. Donna? She stuttered. My name is Donna. Do you have a surname, Donna? I took out the checkbook and a Mont Blanc pen from my inner pocket. What do you mean? She swayed from foot to foot, ogling me openly now. Like once she hopped through the mental barrier of looking at me, she couldn't stop. A last name, I smiled. Oh, yeah. Hammond. Donna Hammond. I'm writing you a check for $2,000, trusting you to buy food with it, Donna. I scribbled as I spoke, my eyes still holding hers. She seemed mesmerized, and it depressed me how different her baby's life was going to be from ours. How my baby would never have to think about where the next meal was going to come from, or have to deal with an untreated medical situation because we couldn't afford the bill that came with it. I ripped the check and handed it to her. Before she plucked it from between my fingers, I raised my arm in the air, stopping her from taking it. There's a catch. I knew it, she huffed, baring her teeth. What is it? I'll give you this check. No questions asked, but, I drawled, I will give you a check for $10,000 and secure you a spot at a women's shelter if you do two things. She looked behind my shoulders frantically, licking her lips. Okay, but with a condom. I don't want no diseases. Was that what she thought I had in mind? Some of my loafers were older than her, for crying out loud. It's not sex I want from you, Donna. I want you to give me any information about your boyfriend's whereabouts. Call me as soon as you hear from him. I produced a business card, handing it to her. And I want you to promise me that you are packing your bags and leaving this apartment. I'll send someone over who'll take you to a women's shelter. Deal? She said. I handed her the check. She took it with trembling fingers, looking up at me again. But what if I never hear from him again? He's not taking my calls. Will you cancel the check? I shook my head. Not if you keep your end of the bargain and leave him for good. I will. I am, she corrected herself. He screwed me over. I'm not going to forgive him for what he did to me and my baby. I tucked the checkbook back into my pocket, giving her a wry smile. Even if Belle wasn't safe from Frank, his ex-girlfriend now was. And that was something, too. On my way back to my office, I called Sam. He picked up on the first ring. If this is about Frank, I'm still trying to find him. He slipped under the radar. I choked up the steering wheel. I did not like to be in a point of disadvantage, but right now, that was exactly where I was. Are you looking into Louisa and my mother, too? Yes, I heard Sam clicking away on his laptop. And I can't yet rule them out. There's a lot of money anchored to that goddamn will you're ignoring, and all of it's tied to assets and valuables. I can see your mother's incentive. What about Louisa? Ah, that bag of fucking English delights, Sam spat out. Yeah, she is still an option too. It appears that her family is not as wealthy as they claim to be. I pulled some reports from the private Swiss account they're using. Whatever they have in HSBC in Britain, both private and business accounts, is not enough to maintain their lifestyle for the next 5 years. So I can see why Bouchard is being pressured to marry you. She needs to save her and her brother's skin. The cash pool is dwindling fast. Well, that's a shite show. Word, Nancy Drew. How the fuck did it get this far? I wondered aloud. For 2 decades, I'd been careful to stay out of trouble, and now it seemed like trouble found me every step of the way. Well, let's see. You had unfinished business across the pond, as you Brits like to call it. The woman you're with is a goddamn menace and shouldn't be left to her own devices. And on top of all this, you seem to have a golden cock, because everyone wants it. My cock only wants Emmabelle, I said grumpily. Isn't that sad? Fucking tragic. Promise me one thing, I said. No, Sam answered flatly. I went ahead anyway. That nothing happens to Belle. There was silence on the other line. I slowed my Bentley and came to a stop in front of a traffic light. Finally, he spoke. Nothing'll happen to Emmabelle. You have my word.
Chapter 29. Belle, 15 years old. I end up spending summer break in Southie. Mom and Dad are bummed that I haven't gone to a training camp. Even more so that I don't want to go back to cross country next year. They'll survive. Persephone and Sailor are blossoming into little women. It's nice to watch, even if I've never felt more uncomfortable in my bones than I do now. Ross, now 15, experienced his first sloppy kiss with a guy named Rain, who was vacationing with his family on the Cape at the same time Ross was there with his family. They exchanged numbers, but when Ross got home and called, he realized a number was missing. He's been crying and laughing about it for days now. Me. I made it my mission to turn myself into a chameleon. I start putting on makeup and experimenting with my hair and clothes. Anything to make myself more comfortable in my skin. The good thing about this whole year is that my knee is no longer suffering. It still hurts, but it doesn't feel like death anymore. I walk back from Ross's place. Jokes aside, he's been pretty bummed about the whole Rain thing. I wish I could tell him things could be much worse as far as first kisses go. But I know he's going to freak out if I mention Coach, and honestly, it doesn't even matter at this point. It's done. Over. I bob my head to the sound of "Hate to Say I Told You So" by the Hives, trying to lighten my own mood. Maybe I'll ask Percy and Sailor if they want to catch a movie or something, get all the sugar rush from the soda, and eat buttered popcorn. I take the shortcut to our apartment through an alleyway when a blue car pulls up and blocks my way to the other side. Its blueness hits me in the gut immediately. Brenda? I rip my headphones from my ears, turn around, and start running without finding out. I hear a car door open and slam shut behind me. My knee slows me down, but I'm still fast as hell. All I need to do is get to Main Street, and then it's done. There's nothing she can do to me. But then I feel a hand grab onto my throat, and I'm being dragged back into the alleyway, kicking and screaming. I can tell it's not Brenda. Brenda wouldn't be faster than me, and her palms wouldn't feel so rough. Hello, little liar. Where's Jeff? I've been keeping an eye on you all summer and noticed you haven't met a single boy, even with your slutty new look. His voice makes me want to throw up. I roar savagely, throwing fists everywhere. He cups my mouth to shut me up. I can feel Coach's fingers behind the small of my back as he unbuckles himself, tugs my mini skirt up. No, 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 no. Now, now. You can go and fuck whoever you want after I'm done with you, but I'm going to pop that sweet cherry. Let me just grab a condom. I find fresh wrath in me when I hear the word condom. I manage to turn around and claw my nails into his eyes. Momentarily free, I scream for help again. With his vision blurred, he pounces on me, tackling me to the ground. His first blow lands on my jaw and stuns me into silence, even when the rest of my body still struggles to break free.
Fine. Never mind about the condom, bitch.
He spits on my face. I continue fighting, even when I know I've lost the war. When all my soldiers are dead, and my horses are gone, and my land is swollen, thick with blood. I keep fighting when he breaks me, when he takes me, when there's nothing left to fight for. I keep fighting, because that's the only way I know how to survive.
Belle. The morning after my argument with Devin, I padded barefoot to his bed to apologize, but at 6:30, he wasn't there. I brushed my teeth, slipped into a white mini dress that highlighted my calves, and ate a piece of avocado toast. Afterwards, I drove to a different police station from the one I previously went to, and the girl that I was filed another complaint, this time with a policewoman who seemed much more competent and much more freaked out about it, which oddly made me feel better. By noon, my schedule was clear, and my ass was bored. I knew Sam Brennan, whom I was planning to corner and demand he take me on as a client, wasn't going to be in Badlands before 8 in the evening, so I still had time to burn. I stopped by Madame Mayhem to go over a few files and check on the staff. Devin didn't want me to go there, but I had my gun, Krav Maga skills, and Simon. As much as I hated to admit it, having a bodyguard the size of a politician's ego wasn't such a bad thing. I showed up at the back office of my own club, armed with my laptop and a smile. "Honey, I'm home," I announced to Ross, whose eyes bulged out of their sockets on impact. He rushed to me, shaking his head and fist simultaneously.
"Holy Cody Simpson's abs on a poster, what are you doing here?"
"Working?"
"Under these circumstances?"
He cradled my belly, the belly in which a person was now fluttering and flipping and doing all kinds of amazing things, especially at night, and gasped.
"Yeah, you expect me to just drop my responsibilities and dip?"
"I'm expecting you to look out for your well-being as well as your child's. I'm just going to do a couple hours of spreadsheets."
"Bitch, you're not an accountant. The world's not going to collapse into itself if you don't check on the Belgian beer supply today. And sorry to break it to you, we're doing swimmingly without you."
Simon appeared out of nowhere, as if by magic, the minute my voice carried from the back room. To say he didn't look happy to see me was the understatement of the century.
"You're here."
Simon stopped at the door, disappointment rolling from his body in waves.
"Hello to you too, Si."
I smiled broadly.
"Mind if I work alongside you in your office?"
he asked me, but looked at Ross as if to say, "I'm knocking down her door if she refuses." I waved him off with a smile.
"Sure, whatever makes you and your uptight boss happy."
"You're your own greatest health hazard. I'm on the verge of quitting."
Ross slapped the back of his hand to his forehead before stomping off back to the bar to unload a shipment of alcohol.
"Oh, and I'm telling your beau."
I settled in front of my desk and popped my laptop open.
"Go ahead, traitor."
Ross popped his head back through my door, grinning like a loon.
"So he is your beau. Girl, so jealous."
I was putting a real dent in my workload, securing an out-of-state burlesque act that was visiting from Louisiana for the summer, and negotiating a contract with a new liquor distributor when there was a knock on my office door. Rolling back in my chair, I stretched. Thank God. I could use a distraction. Maybe it's food. Do you think it's food, Si? Simon, who sat a few feet away from me, dutifully pretending to do some filing, even though there was very little to be filed in my office, stood up from his spot on the floor and dusted off his jeans. He motioned me with his hand to stay seated, heading for the door. "Has anyone ever told you you're anal retentive, Si? You could use some loosening up." Baby Whitehall fluttered in agreement inside my belly, and I cradled it for a moment.
"Yeah.
Fair point, baby Whitehall. I know, mommy's not perfect either, but you have to admit, at least I come close.
There's a woman here to see you,
Simon said tersely, blocking my line of vision of who it was with his robo-cop shoulders.
My, a visitor. I laced my fingers together. Is it Purse or Sailor? Ash is at work, so it can't be her. Either way, they aren't allowed in unless they come bearing edible gifts.
I think you should pass on this meeting. It's not a social call.
Simon's face was so tight, I thought he was going to explode. Who is it?
Miss Penrose.
Why did he still insist on Miss Penrose when I called him Cy? Why couldn't he be less uptight? Where the heck did Devin find this guy, anyway?
Who is it? I repeated, getting sick and tired of men telling me what to do.
Simon took a deep breath, throwing his head back in exasperation.
Louisa Butchert.
Let her in and leave? My voice was ice cold.
But
do it, Cy, before I kick you out of my establishment. You know I can.
Furthermore, he knew I would. We stared at each other for a beat. Heaving out a sigh, he stalked out of my office. I could see his head peeking in the hallway, though, staying close by. Louisa waltzed in, stylishly emaciated in an Alexander McQueen pleated coat dress. I wasn't intimidated, just pissed off she kept showing up like a fart stain on underwear every time I tried pushing her out of my mind.
Louisa, what a delightful surprise. Lost your way to Chanel.
I put on my best fuck you smile.
Oh, Amabel, I do love your dress. What is it exactly? Victoria's Secret, Shag Me in the Dark?
She drawled, perching her bony ass on the edge of the seat. Her vintage Hermes told me she meant business. Nobody had any business carrying a $250,000 bag unless they were willing to show what was inside it was equally as impressive. To what do I owe this visit? I purred, cutting straight to the chase.
I think we both know the answer to that question, so why don't we skip the part where I insult your intelligence and you waste my time?
Sounds good. I curled my hair around one finger playfully. So, you're still holding out hope you can get your claws on my boyfriend.
I had no idea why I decided to call him that in front of her, but it felt right. The title, the weight of it. Besides, Devin called me his girlfriend the other day, so surely I wasn't completely off base, even if I was pretty sure he currently wanted to murder me.
Girlfriend, she huffed. Devi's family will never accept you. In fact, there will be no family to accept you after this is all done and dealt with. Devin might seem tough and unrelenting when it comes to his mother, but trust me, he spent half his lifetime trying to cater to her every whim. Family is everything. If you care for him, you would not deprive him of his. One baby is not enough to replace all he'd be losing.
This woman had some ovaries on her.
Balls implied that women didn't have courage, an idea I rejected promptly.
After all, it wasn't men who found themselves pushing a watermelon-sized human out of their pee-pee hole. Draping my hand on my chest, I feigned shock.
I didn't realize I was destroying his life. Please allow me to remedy the situation immediately by moving to a tropical country and changing my name so he can't find me.
The words, you guessed it, were spoken in a fake English accent.
Don't play dumb. We both know his relationship with you is the only thing in the way of our marriage,
Louisa bit out impatiently.
So?
I yawned. We're both consenting grown-ups, and I don't know if you noticed, but we're kind of in the middle of taking a huge step together.
The step means nothing in your situation. You're not getting married. You don't love him. I do. He means nothing to you.
This time, each of her words cut into me like shards of glass because I realized they weren't true. Still, I couldn't confess my feelings to Devin, let alone this she-devil. What's your point? I drummed on the back of my laptop, rolling my eyes.
Let him go. Tell him you don't want anything to do with him. Open the path for him to go back to his family, to his sister, to me. This is his destiny. It's what he was born for.
He was born to make his own decisions. No. Maybe you were a commoner with no legacy or responsibilities.
Devin was made for greater stuff.
Outrage propelled me from my seat. I threw my hands up in the air for good measure. You want me to tell him to screw off so you can marry him? Give me one goddamn reason why I should.
Very well. I'll give you 1,000,000 of them.
Louisa slammed her bag between us on my desk with a thud and took out a pre-written check. I had to blink rapidly to see if the numbers were right. Yep, sure were. $1,000,000, paid to the order of Emmabel Petra Penrose. I twisted my thumb ring without touching the check, which was now sitting on the desk between us. I ran my teeth over my bottom lip. My rage was replaced with worry and trepidation. How did she know my middle name? How long had she been gunning for me to leave Boston? And didn't all of this feel just a little too familiar? Like maybe Frank wasn't the only source of the threats toward me. I tried to think about it pragmatically, to do what was best for me and the baby. Devin was a risk. I felt all kinds of things toward him, things I had no business feeling. If he married Louisa, I wouldn't have to worry about him anymore. I'd never touch a married man again, dead or alive. The problem would be solved. And while we were speaking about the pros of taking the money, I would be set for life. I could keep Madame Mayhem and still take a huge step back, provide security for myself without having to jump through hoops, carry a weapon, and beg Sam Brennan to pick up my calls. I could put Ross in charge of the club, which I was growing tired of anyway. Being raunchy and shocking was a full-time job, it seemed, and find another venture. Maybe a high fashion store or an interior design company. Then there were the cons, and many of those, too. First and foremost, I didn't want Louisa to win. She was strong-arming me, and I didn't respond well to bullying. The second thing was it wasn't fair to Devin. It wasn't my place to decide for him who he'd marry or not marry. Ultimately, though, there was one deal breaker. Louisa and Ursula could both be behind the threats against me, and by taking this deal, I could protect my child. I just had to play my cards right and ensure that neither my baby nor Devin would get the short end of the stick in this situation. Picking up the check, I threw it in front of Louisa's face with a smile. Time to play hardball. Sorry, no dice, princess. Dev and I have a contract in place. I already agreed he'll be a part of the baby's life and share custody with me. I intend to keep my word.
Oh, Devi, Louisa clipped, massaging her temples. You had to go for the one whore with the heart of gold.
I'm not a whore, I hissed. But I can recognize a bitch when I see one.
He'll be in the baby's life. She pushed the check toward me again. I give you my word. We both know I can't stop him from doing that, but he'd still be married to me.
Dandy, then what are you asking me for exactly? I asked.
Dump him, Louisa said quietly. I'll do the rest, but please, just cut it off with him. I know women like you. You don't have a future with him. You don't take him seriously. Your intentions aren't pure.
And yours are? I cut into her words. She screwed up her face in distaste.
He is about to lose everything his family has worked centuries for.
Arguing with her on this topic was pointless. Devin had admitted as much to me himself. At the end of the day, Devin and I weren't a good fit. No one would be a good fit for me. I'll take the money and leave him, but I'm not pushing him away from the baby's life, and I'm not moving out of Boston. It amazed me just how much I hated myself in that moment. How I turned out to be as bad as the people who scarred me. The Mr. Lockins of the world, without virtue, morals, or direction.
Fine, Fine. That's good enough for me. When will you do it? Louisa asked.
Numbly, I pocketed the check in my purse under my desk. I felt like I was having an out-of-body experience, like it wasn't me who was sitting in front of this woman now. It's for the best. He would hurt you. Every other man you put your trust in has. Today.
Good. Then I'll be sure to be on standby when he needs my comfort.
She stood up, clapping her hands together once.
Ursula is going to be very happy with the news.
Oh, I'm sure. I was about to keel over and throw up.
You're doing the right thing, she assured me.
Nodding faintly, I pointed at the door. I could barely breathe, let alone talk. Louisa walked away, closed the door behind her, and left me with the weight of my decision, knowing full well it was going to crush my soul to oblivion. Chapter 30. Belle. He wasn't going to let me leave. I knew that much for a fact. For all his niceness, and Devin Whitehall was a good and true gentleman, he didn't react well to bullshit, and he and I both knew that I was serving him a healthy dose of messiness neither of us deserved. So, I took the coward's way out. I wrote him a note. I told myself that it was fine. I would sit and talk to him face to face. I just needed some time to digest everything. Besides, it was better if I didn't stay in Boston now that I suspected two different forces of trying to drive me away. Devin would be fine. He always was. Strong and sun-washed and golden. With his title, sharp intellect, and lazy, surly drawl, he'd be fine. Shit. I was making the biggest mistake of my life, and I was doing it for my daughter. Keeping her safe was most important. So this was what it felt like to love a person. Even before I knew her, even before she was out there in the world, I decided to handwrite Devin a letter. I wanted something personal and not too brief to break the news to him. After all, he'd been nothing but good to me. It took me 4 hours to write something I didn't completely detest. Dear Devin, thank you for your hospitality and for dealing with my brand of bullshit, which, let's admit it, is too much for 99.99% of the human race. The thing is, I don't think living together is doing either of us any good. I make you miserable and you make me uncomfortable. The feelings you stir in me leave me raw and scared. As for you, I know last night you were on the verge of punching a hole through your bedroom wall, all because of me. I know things are kind of rocky, but please know that I filed a complaint today and that the police are working on it. I promise to carry my weapon at all times and to stay safe, but I can't do this anymore. I'm afraid if we keep having a relationship, the stress is going to get to the baby, and I have to put her before anything else, before you, before me. I'm so happy to do this journey with you and request that we remain friends. With that being said, I'll be taking a step back and will try to look inside myself to find the grace and trust you deserve to be treated with. Lots of love. Belle. P.S. You should marry Louisa. She loves you.
Chapter 31. Belle. 15 years old. 10th grade starts with bangs. Not to be confused with a bang. Ross, of course, is behind the idea.
Bangs really suit you. I just love your hair. It's fantastic to work with. I need to straighten my own bangs every morning,
Ross moans. We made a deal. I'll give both of us bangs if he agrees to go to Krav Maga classes with me. We go 3 times a week. The instructors are tired of our faces, but I no longer leave my fate in the hands of men I don't know. I watch for Coach Locken in the hallways, in my classes, in the cafeteria. I'm never going to let him do that to me again, and revenge will come. I've seen enough documentaries and watched enough news cycles to know that handing him over to the authorities won't do any good. I need to take the law into my own hands,
because whether he gets away with what he's done or not, my life will still be fucked forever. I refuse to be that girl who messed with her coach, who let him eat her out for months and then, oops, got scared and told mommy and daddy when he took her virginity. No, screw that. I'm a girl with a plan. Coach Lockin stays away from me. 1 month follows the other, and I almost start breathing again. Then, one Saturday morning, bright and early, when Mom's making pancakes downstairs, Dad reads the paper and Persephone is on the phone with Sailor, something happens. It's weird that it happens because everything else about this Saturday is so ordinary, so mundane. The scent of pancakes wafts under the cracks of the bathroom. So does Persephone's laughter as she and Sailor discuss how obnoxiously romantic both our parents are. Sailor is, unfortunately, also the spawn of two people who really need to stop pawing one another in public. I get a text from Lockin. I'm going to do it again if you tell. Be warned. Consider me warned. I'm about to throw up. But I think I know why he feels confident in telling me this. He knows the authorities are a piece of crap. The school board would never believe me. The local police station is full of his schoolmates, people he drinks beer with, and Southie is just not a place where you go to the police. You take care of shit on your own. I pee in the toilet. Feel like I stopped peeing. My bladder is empty, I know, because I've been peeing 15 years straight every day, multiple times a day without fail. But for some reason, I keep dripping. The cramping in my stomach is bad. Like my gut is constricting against something it wants to purge out. I look down, between my legs, and frown. A gush of blood comes out. I blink into the toilet bowl, spreading my thighs apart, and I see a clump of something. Oh God. Oh God. Oh God. I bend over forward and throw up right there on the tiles. I'm shaking. No, it can't be. I reach above my head for a towel hanging on a rack and stuff it into my mouth to muffle my cries. I squirm on the floor and scream into the towel. Crying, crying, crying. I was pregnant. The bastard got me pregnant. Of course he did, but why did I lose the baby? I calculate back and realize the pregnancy was 5 weeks long. I'd fallen during the last week of summer break, but still, how? Why? How come? This is the moment I realize I am not myself anymore. That maybe I'll never truly be myself because I didn't have time to figure out who I was. This is when I think my faith in humanity will never be restored. That things cannot possibly get any worse. And then they do.
Chapter 32. Devon. I was going to fucking kill someone, and it wasn't going to be Emma Bell Penrose, even though she was the woman who most desired my wrath. Crumpling the handwritten letter, I slam-dunked it into the bin, scooped my keys from the kitchen island, and charged toward the door. I took the stairs two at a time, almost toppling over on my way to the Bentley. My first stop was Swevin's still-paid-for rented flat. The matchbox-sized hellhole from which I rescued her like a flea-ridden puppy. I banged on the door until my fists were red and sore. No one answered. Open the door, Emmabelle, I know you're there. One of her neighbors shuffled outside their apartment, clad in a Big Lebowski robe, a joint dangling from the side of his mouth.
You're wasting your time, man. She hasn't lived here in a few months. Moved in with her rich boyfriend.
The neighbor puffed on his spliff, cocking his head to the side.
Come to think of it, he looked a lot like you.
She hadn't come back home. My next destination was Persephone and Killian's place. I tried calling Belle the entire journey. She did not pick up. Not one to be deterred by her lack of availability, I left her voicemails, left and right, while trudging along the painfully slow traffic of Boston during rush hour. Hello, darling, it's your boyfriend, the one you just left with a fucking note. Yes, the same one whose baby you're carrying. If you think we aren't going to talk about it, you're gravely mistaken. Oh, and by the way, whatever happened to the fact that people are trying to kill you? Ring me back. Kisses. Dev. And then, Swevin, hope your evening is going better than mine. Where are you? Also, if this is you telling me in a roundabout way Louisa's presence is bothering you, may I suggest hiring a life or speech coach to help you with your communication skills? Call me back. And finally, Emmabelle fucking Penrose, pick up the bloody phone! Things escalated from there. I arrived at Percy and Killian's place using the lion's head brass knocker so hard it dislocated and dropped onto the floor. My girlfriend's, yes, she was still that, sister informed me, rather regretfully, that her sister was not there. Are you saying this because you're hiding the bloody wench, or because she's really not here? I stood on her threshold, panting like a dog. My wife said her sister's not here. Killian appeared behind Persephone at the door, draping a protective arm over her shoulder. Are you calling her a liar? No, but I am calling you an insufferable wanker. I'd lost all form of etiquette and manners, resorting to hostility, so I have a good reason to think someone might be hiding something. They're close. They'd cover for each other. Actually, Percy squared her shoulders, looking rather haughty. I would like to know where she is, too. I worry about her. She might not take the threats against her seriously, but I do. Ask Sailor and Ashling, I instructed her, but I was already pacing back to my car, making my way to Sailor. Let me know if you hear anything. Will do, she called from her spot at the door. Swevin wasn't at Sailor Fitzpatrick's house either. She wasn't at Ashling Brennan's place. She wasn't at Madame Mayhem. She wasn't anywhere. It was as if a sinkhole swallowed her. I called Brennan. After all, I paid him to have her followed, the boyfriend of the year that I was. When he didn't pick up, I decided to pay him a visit. For what I was paying him, Emmabelle should not only be safe, but also warm, cozy, and getting regular pedicures and 3 meals a day. Bursting into the gambling room at Badlands, I flipped over a poker table. Sam was arranging a game with 2 senators and a business mogul. The chips fell on the floor with a clank. He looked up. What the fuck? The fuck is you fucked me over. I'm paying you a retainer to keep tabs on my girlfriend. Newsflash, it's been a second since I hired you, and I have no bloody clue where she is. Sam ushered me to his back office. We rushed through a busy, narrow corridor, passing men who wanted desperately to stop and chat with us. I swatted them away like they were flies. Would you shut your trap? I have a goddamn reputation to uphold. Where's Emmabelle? I bit out. We got to his office and I slammed the door behind us, then proceeded to trash the place. I tossed his couch over, tore at a Roman curtain, and punched a hole in a portrait of Troy Brennan, an offense which was likely punishable with death by stoning. I've been calling and calling your arse. It went straight to voicemail. Was busy buttering up Dumb and Dumber, Sam said shortly, producing his phone from his back pocket and punching in a number. Let me call my guys and check. The good news was, they answered him immediately. The bad news was that, well, they lost her. What do you mean they lost her? My voice rose and I found myself yanking his Apple screen from his desk and crashing it against the wall. She is not a fucking thought thread, a subplot in a book, a pair of sunglasses. One does not simply lose a 30-year-old woman. She tricked them, Sam said, lightly stunned by the revelation. His eyes were wide, his mouth slightly agape. I gathered it didn't happen to him often. She must have realized they were following her and tricked them. She's a smart woman, I seethed. God, couldn't she be just a little less perceptive? Sam scowled. You were the genius who didn't want to tell her I was putting surveillance on her. In my entire career, no one I followed has ever managed to slip under the radar. Thanks for the fun fucking fact. I grabbed the collar of his shirt and jerked him toward me so our noses were crushed together. Find my girlfriend by the end of tonight, or I will personally ensure you and the DA who is covering for your ass are both dragged through court for the rest of your miserable lives to account for every crime you've committed over the last 2 decades. I stalked out of his club and went to the only person I knew may have some information. Louisa. Louisa waited for me in a tiny creme and black lace bodysuit, complete with a corset that made her waist as non-existent as my need to screw her. "Hello, darling. Good to see you." She sidestepped from the door to allow me to walk in. As soon as I closed it behind us, I pinned her with a look that said a fuckfest wasn't in the cards for us. "Know your audience, lass. Put something on."
"Like what?"
she asked, blinking slowly. "A fucking raincoat, if you wish. Do I look like a bloody stylist?" I grabbed something I suspected was a robe lying on the back of a chair and threw it at her. She wrapped it around herself quickly, drawing in a breath.
"What's the matter?"
She made her way to the wet bar to pour us some drinks. "What did you do?" Surprisingly, I sounded fine. Wry, businesslike, not like I was about to commit capital murder.
"What do you mean?"
She stepped toward me with two glasses of whiskey, handing me one. I didn't acknowledge the gesture nor the drink. "What did you do?" I repeated.
"Devi, stop being so weird, for heaven's sake."
She took a step back, I took a step forward. I had no idea what I was doing, and I didn't want to find out. Swevin brought out emotions in me I didn't care to explore. I'd always been calculated, calm, full of confidence. I was not any of those things right now. "What did you do?" I took both glasses from her hands, putting them aside on a credenza, crowding her against the wall. We were inches from each other. The air was charged with menace, violence. She could feel it. Louisa wilted slightly and finally asked,
"How much do you know?"
"Enough to know it reeks of your involvement." She stuck her chin up.
"What I did may have been unethical, but it certainly wasn't illegal."
"Wasn't illegal?" "Yup." I was roaring in her face now, her hair flew back from the impact. "There are people after her. She is on the run."
"People after her?"
Louisa wore an expression of genuine surprise.
"I did no such thing. I'd never send anyone to go after a woman, let alone a pregnant one. It goes against everything I believe."
I gave her an "aren't you a saint" look. She elevated her eyebrows in a way that said, "Quote me on this, motherfucker." I decided to strike her off the list of suspects. For now. Frank and my mother kept my hands full as it was. "You did something," I maintained.
"A small something," she countered. "Really small, teeny tiny, actually."
"What did you do?"
"Devi, now." "It was your mother's idea."
She dug her fingernails into her fists, looking unbearably embarrassed. Her cheek turned in my direction. She couldn't meet my gaze. "What did you do?" I asked for the millionth time.
"I can't tell you. You'll hate me."
"Too late, already there. Now, for the last time before I make you regret the day you were born, what happened between this morning and this evening to inspire my girlfriend to leave me?" All the air was sucked from the room in the moment before her confession.
"I paid her."
It was out in the open now, the admission. And once it was out, Louisa proceeded, gingerly throwing another crumb of information.
"It's Ursula, Devi. She was relentless, completely unhinged. Time is ticking. She got nervous, gutted, really, and..."
She shook her head frantically, reaching for my face. I threw her hands away. "And?"
"And she wrote her a $1 million check."
"Fucking hell."
"And Amabel took it,"
Louisa added desperately, her small fists balling around the fabric of my dress shirt.
"She took the check, Devin. What does it say about her? She doesn't love you, doesn't need you, doesn't see you. I ache for you every day."
She spoke the words to my shirt, unable to look at me when she said them.
"You're my first and last thought. You're always in the back of my mind. Loving you is like breathing. It's compulsive. Let me love you, please. Just give me a chance and I'll be everything you need me to be."
"You can't be everything I need you to be." I stepped backward, letting her stumble a little before gaining her composure. "Because you're not the woman I love." Her eyes were big and full of tears. I walked over to a small dining table, picked up her phone, and handed it over to her. "Now you're going to call and tell your pilot that's on standby that you will be leaving tonight. Go back to England.
you will never set foot in Boston again. Not as long as I'm alive. And if you ever come back. I paused, thinking about it. Louise's face was now marred with makeup and tears, a concoction that gave her a slightly comical look, like she was a long-lost Cradle of Filth member. It didn't feel good, or right, crushing her like that. But I had no choice. Darling, I gathered her arms in mine, my voice dropping to a whisper. I'm never going to marry you, not in this lifetime and not the next. With or without Emmabel in the picture, I'm an all-or-nothing kind of bloke. With her, I want it all. With you, I let her complete the sentence in her head, before adding, if you try to tamper with my relationship with my girlfriend, and she is still my girlfriend, make no mistake about it, even if she doesn't know it yet, I will ensure your family and legacy are both destroyed. I will ensure everyone knows Byron has demolished a historical church so he can place his side piece within a stone's throw of his countryside estate. The money he paid Parliament member Don Dainty under the table to promote favorable tax laws would be revealed. And let us not forget your dear brother Benedict has a particular taste for underage girls. Your family is corrupted through the nose, and I am willing to unveil every piece of wrongdoing it has done over the years if you don't give me your word here and now that you are going to stop this. All this dirt, courtesy of Sam Brennan and his detective work. Maybe he was worth some of his fee after all. I could tell it sank in this time around. That it hit her real and hard, in the same place it hit me, the day I knew my father didn't love me. Although now, it seemed like my entire family didn't love me. Mum had betrayed me too. Outwardly, nothing changed. Louisa was still the same Louisa, willowy and delicate, a perfect, stainless feather in the wind. But her eyes turned from glossy to dull. Her mouth became rigid. The twinkle behind her irises was gone. Answer me with words, I said softly, using my hand to gently pry her jaw open. The words fell from between her lips like they were on the tip of them, just waiting to be said.
I understand. You never want to see me again, Devon.
And to my surprise, behind those words there were cinders, still hot from where the flame had once been. She was angry, defiant. She would rise from the ashes, I hoped, and find someone else. I turned around and made my way to the airport. I had a plane to catch. On the way, I called Emmabel a few more times, dropping more messages that would make any serial killer proud. You're bloody crazy if you think I'm giving you up. You were mine from the moment I set my eyes on you. When you weren't even aware of my existence, when I came to serve your sister with a draconic agreement she shouldn't have signed. And then, the night we got in bed together for the first time at Killian's cabin, was the night I first contemplated breaking my pact with myself to never marry a woman. I refused to lose the only woman who is worth breaking my word over. As well as, God damn it, I love you. As I zipped through neighborhoods and skyscrapers and lives that weren't mine, I pondered something Louisa had told me before I left her. It was true that Belle didn't love me. After all, she took the check. But I loved her. And maybe that was enough.
Chapter 33. Belle, 15 years old. I'm kissing 16. And that's the only thing I'm kissing. My life is blissfully, disgustingly boring. I don't date. I don't socialize with anyone other than my sister, Sailor, and Ross. But I talk a big talk, and I sure as hell show the world that all is fine with Emmabel Penrose, that I am an invincible, happy-go-lucky girl. And sometimes, on good days, I can even believe my own bullshit for a moment or two. Coach Locken, however, is not doing so hot. His wife Brenda is pregnant again, even though little Stephen is, what, a little over 1 year old? That in itself is hardly bad news to grown-ups, but the fact that he's been having an affair with one of the teachers is. Miss Parnell is my 22-year-old substitute teacher and his newest girlfriend. The showdown at the front gate last week was legendary. Even I couldn't help but get riled up and excited. Brenda pulled up at the curb, little Stephen still napping in the back seat. She cornered sweet Miss Parnell, bitch-slapping her in front of the entire school. Poor Miss Parnell didn't stand a chance. She just started crying. Her sobs became more violent, louder when Brenda screamed, "Did you know he got me knocked up again? Did you know? And did he tell you we broke up while I was pregnant with Stevie? Because that piece of shit scumbag sent me to my mom's saying he needed to get the house exterminated and disinfected before the baby arrived. He drove down to Jersey every goddamn weekend to get some of this ass." Wow. Brenda wasn't the sweet woman I saw in the engagement picture at all. All the same, it made me feel easier, lighter about what I was about to do to Coach Locken. I didn't forgive and didn't forget. I was just biding my time, putting more weeks and months in the calendar between us so that when the time came, I wasn't going to be a suspect. Now, I'm walking home from school, feeling marginally better about life. For one thing, Locken got the boot after that showdown and is no longer working at my school, which is great. For another, my last two classes have been canceled, so I'm dipping early for an afternoon of breaded fried ravioli, the frozen Trader Joe's kind, and Ricky Lake reruns, or as some like to call it, heaven. Percy isn't due to come home for 2 more hours. Dad's at work, isn't he always? And Mom finally agreed to go to therapy and deal with her dark spells, so she is all the way across the city and won't be back until evening. I unlock the front door to our apartment, happy in the knowledge that Coach Locken is miserable wherever he is right now in the world. I tow my sneakers off, let my backpack slip from my shoulders by the door, and pad barefoot across the living room. I'm going to deal with the ravioli in a second. First, I'm going to pee. I still hate going into the bathroom to pee. It's like I have PTSD and expect to have a miscarriage again, even though I know I'm not pregnant. But no matter how time passes, how my life seems to look like it turned a corner, I cannot help but hate Locken for what he did to me, for what he did to my body. In my mind, this happened because of the way he took me. It was so violent, so frantic. I'm sure he caused some kind of damage. I pass by my parents' bedroom and notice the door is ajar. Not shocking, considering this house is always a mess and we don't have a closed doors or open doors policy in place. I stroll by it when I hear a soft moan that makes me stop dead in my tracks. Oh shit. They're here. They're here and they're having sex. This is worse than I thought. Their love knows no bounds. Someone kill me. I turn around, intending to tiptoe back to the kitchen and maybe pee in the sink so I don't have to listen to this crap and get scarred any further when I hear my father's voice.
Oh, Sophia.
Sophia? Who the fuck is Sophia? My mom's name is Caroline. What in the shit? I huddle back to the ajar door, peering through the crack, blinking the image into focus. My dad is lying on the bed, and on top of him, with her back to me, is a woman who is definitely not my mother. Long red hair, slender figure, freckles on her shoulders. She is riding him. Dad is cheating on Mom. The perfect fairy tale I grew up believing is all a lie. All men are cheaters. All men are untrustworthy. All men are trash. I pad back to the front door and slip out of the apartment, taking the stairs 3 at a time up to the roof of the building. I don't jump, but not because I don't want to. Only because I have an unfinished grudge to tend to. And Dad? I'll never forgive him. Chapter 34. Belle. I was being followed. I could tell I was being followed when I looked through my rearview mirror and noticed the same incognito black sedan zipping out of Boston, gliding onto the highway, staying the same four-car gap from me no matter how many lanes I switched. Not knowing who it was, Frank, Louisa, Devin's mom, the devil himself, I decided to escape it. Today seemed like a bad day to die and get buried in the woods. I lane-hopped for a while, feeling sweat coating my forehead as I tried to think of a game plan. How was I getting rid of this strange car? And then it hit me. I popped my blinker to make a right into one of the small towns bracketing Greater Boston and waited patiently in a line of cars. My stalker did the same. When the light turned green, I made a terrible, and I do mean freaking awful, traffic offense and continued straight ahead, not taking the right and speeding into a busy intersection. Cars slammed their brakes, horns blared at me angrily, but when I looked back, I saw that the black sedan was way behind, trapped inside a sea of vehicles in a traffic jam from hell. I drove and drove and drove some more, not sure where I'd end up, and somehow, already knowing where I was going to go. All at the same time. For the first time since I'd turned 18, I was living with my parents again. I couldn't kid myself anymore. Staying in Boston at this point was a death wish. Might as well stick an "I'm with stupid" sign on my forehead pointing at my brain. Several people wanted me dead. And I just signed my soul away to the devil in stilettos. It was time to lay low until I came up with a game plan. My parents lived in the place where sex appeal went to die, also known as Wellesley, Massachusetts. A few years ago, my parents announced excitedly that they'd saved up enough money to fulfill their longtime dream of becoming boring retirees, moved from Southie and bought a sage green colonial house with a matching roof, a swinging chair on the front porch, and red shutters. Percy and I called it the Gingerbread House, but only one of us was excited to come here each Christmas and play the family charade.
Oh, Belly Belle, I'm so happy you're with us again, even if the circumstances are less than ideal.
Mom poked her head through the backyard's double doors, offering me an apologetic smile. Perched on the lip of the pool they were so proud of, I dipped my feet in the water, wiggling my toes.
Already told you, Mom, everything's fine.
Nothing's fine if you can't afford your apartment anymore.
She walked out to the patio carrying a bowl of watermelon peppered with fresh feta cheese and mint. Placing it on the edge of the pool beside me, she ran her hand over the yellow lycra of my bathing suit, her fingers halting at my swollen belly.
I moved in because I need a change of pace, not because I can't afford rent.
I selected a beautifully cut piece of watermelon, square and sharp-angled, and popped it into my mouth. It was ice cold. Everyone I know and their mother begged me to step away from Madame Mayhem. They think working on my feet all day is bad for the baby. Mom didn't know that there were people after me. She didn't know about the letters. She didn't know I'd lived the last few weeks with Devin. She didn't know anything. I did this to protect her. Making her worry was futile. Almost cruel. And something else lurked behind my decision to share with her the bare minimum of my pregnancy circumstances. I suspected she wouldn't understand. Honestly, I wasn't entirely sure I understood everything that had happened to me recently.
"Are you sure everything's okay?"
She began untangling my golden locks from my earring, like she used to do when I was a kid.
"You've been here for a couple days now and still haven't told us why exactly. Can't a girl just chill with her folks?"
"I don't remember a time when you didn't go out at night since you were 16.
"Well, Mom, I did a lot to try and distract myself from my reality at that age. But then, I was a clubber 6 months ago, too. I distracted myself for 14 years before Devin stepped into my life and forced me to stay still and take a good look at what my life had become." I pushed another watermelon chunk between my lips, watching her black-eyed Susans across the pool, their stems like necks craning to look up at the sun, the petals glinting under the sun's rays.
"Come with me to the farmer's market. You'll meet all my new bridge friends.
Mom suggested. Holy shit, Mom, you're really selling this to me, I deadpanned, hands tucked under my butt.
Come on, Belly Bell. I can see something's on your mind.
You can, I frowned at my toes. How?
A mother can always tell.
Was I going to know when my baby felt something once they were born without any telltale signs? Would my gut scream at me that something was wrong? Could I pick up on the vibes like fumes from fire before the earth beneath her feet scorched?
Yes,
my mother said, as if reading my mind. She rested her hands on my back. I wanted to fold into a fetal position and cry in her lap. The last few months caught up with me all at once, and now I was exhausted. More than I was afraid of those who were after me, and more than I was angry at myself for taking Louisa's deal. I missed Devin. Missed him so much I couldn't bring myself to turn on my phone for the past couple days and check if I had any messages from him. I missed his gruff, elegant laugh, and the way his dark blonde eyebrows moved animatedly when he talked. I missed his kisses, and the crinkles around his eyes when he grinned mischievously, and the way he called the guy who worked at the convenience store under his apartment the news agent, like he was a BBC anchor and not a dude bro who sold overpriced milk and cigarettes.